That is most concerning to me. Biblical illiteracy leads to a lack of concern for liberty for all.
Welcome to the Family Man Show with Todd Wilson. This is the show where we remind dads of what's most important. I'm your host, Scott Moore. Thanks for joining us today. Hey, Todd, how's it going?
Well, Scott, the sun is pouring in. You can see it on me right now. See my shadow there?
Holy moly.
That means I feel like Noah's Ark, you know, when the rain finally stopped. It feels like it's been rainy for at least a week. So the sun is shining today. It shone yesterday.
Are you old enough to remember what Noah's Ark was like?
No. Sometimes it feels that way. But my wife had a little R&R for a couple of days last week, and that felt refreshing, even though I've kind of forgotten all about that. And we're getting ready to not make our fall loop, but each year we head down to Florida in a fall loop where we speak along the way. We're not speaking this time. We had one thing lined up and it kind of fell through at the end, but we're still going. We're still planning to have some fun, but I'll tell you more about that later. But tell me about you. You gave birth to a kidney stone.
Actually, I don't know if I have given birth to it yet, but.
Oh, really?
While you were having
fun in the sun. We should auction it off.
Oh, yeah. While you were having fun in the sun, I was having the week from hell last week. So.
Oh, man.
Pardon me for if that's offensive to anyone, but that's
no,
sure
that's
what it felt like to me.
Geographical location.
Yes. Monday was my son's last soccer game, probably ever, because I don't think Will's going to play next year and Luke's graduating. So
I know that's sad for you, but it's, for this parent, I love those moments.
Well, it was. I was on the way to take them to their soccer game, and I was going to sit and watch and enjoy and try not to cry and all that, you know. It was a great dad moment, but then on the way there, I started having the worst pain I've ever had in my life in my back and my nether regions, and ended up in the emergency room vomiting heinously from the pain.
And did you think you knew what it was at that time? Or were you thinking?
By that point, yeah, I was like, this has got to be a kidney stone, or everything I've heard about kidney stones applies to something else as well, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So because I felt like I was being stabbed in the back with a knife.
Wow.
On like a little from the up down perspective, a little south of middle and on the right side for this one. And so I now know where my kidney is, and I'm also well acquainted with my pain scale after the 4 days of pain and torture. And then I awoke out of that painful stupor to find that my wife's side of the family had some terrible news that her stepmother's cancer is back. So we went from, you know, me not being able to notice anything else because all I could focus on was pain and discomfort, and to family mourning and stress and what to do.
Wow.
So it was a rough week.
I bet.
But hers was rougher than mine. So.
Anyway. Well, you sound pretty good right now.
Yeah, if you want all the gory details, I can, boy, I could go for a half an hour here easily. So,
well, you may have to in just a second. So,
but, yeah, I'm doing well now.
And that would be a cool thing to auction off. We could probably get some serious change. You know, they could make it into a ring for their wife or, you know, it's kind of like the oyster thing where you crack open the oyster and you get the pearl, you know?
I could take a picture of it and make an NFT and auction that off. That would be impressive.
What's an NFT?
A non-fungible token.
Non-fungible token.
Yes.
I'm old, Scott. I don't know what a non-fungible token is.
Are you aware? Well, this is really geeky tech stuff, so we don't need to go into details on this, but are you at least aware of like Bitcoin and all that stuff? Cryptocurrency.
Yes, I'm not that out of it.
Okay, cool. Well, it's based on that technology, the blockchain technology that makes that stuff possible, makes it possible to make these things where it, like, you could take a picture of of me in pain or of my kidney stone, and then you could make it into an NFT, a non-fungible token, by there's some sort of computer code, which I don't understand any of that stuff. But
I know they make it sound like it's a big deal, and people are stupid enough to base the economy on these things, and they're making like 10. My boys were talking about this yesterday. They're, you know, everybody's a trillionaire, but there isn't anything.
Basically, you could take that digital picture and code it as an NFT, and then, you know, sell it for $1 gazillion. I'm not sure why it sells for $1 gazillion.
I don't either.
But it's
speculation.
Yes.
Because someday it might be worth $2 gazillion.
It's supposedly the digital equivalent of being able to buy like an original Van Gogh or something like that. And then you can sell it and make even more and whatever. But and there's way more stuff to it that you can do. And I'm not getting into all that right now.
This is just so people don't have to get jobs.
Exactly. That's my goal, man.
Honey, we hit the mother load. I got another kidney stone to ruin.
No, I don't want another one of those. And by the way, I did discover, as part of the long version of my story, I did discover somewhere in the pain, when one of the waves of pain hit, I realized that it was about, you know, 200 times the discomfort that I had been having for a month whenever I laid down to go to sleep and had to like adjust my position to kind of get rid of that discomfort.
So you found out you're tougher than you were.
I feel that discomfort again coming on, and I'm going to be running for something. I don't know what, but I'll be like running to my doctor screaming, take care of it now, get it out, do whatever you got to do, because I don't want that pain again.
Ugly. Well, Scott, I hate to shorten your kidney stone story, but we've got a special guest that I'm super excited to have with us. We have Bill Jack with Worldview Academy. I don't want to steal too much of his thunder, but how about I just begin by welcoming. So welcome, Bill, to the Fame of Man show.
Well, thank you. It's always good to fall in line behind a kidney stone as a guest.
It only gets better at that point. So I've known Bill. We've crossed paths lots of times over the years. We've spoken on a lot of events together. Last year, we were at Palmer, Alaska, eating probably the world's largest corn dog I've ever eaten in my life. I was thinking about it this morning, and it still makes me a little queasy, actually. So, Bill, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, your family, and then you can tell us about your role at the Worldview Academy.
Well, I was raised in Illinois, so Southern Illinois, nowhere near Chicago. I ended up teaching for 10 years in a public high school from which I was graduated, which was an interesting experience, teaching with teachers who once taught you, you know, the curtain is pulled back. And during that time, I was approached by a youth ministry called the Caleb Campaign, which trained Christians in the public schools, students and teachers, how to share their faith legally, effectively, and aggressively. And I first ran across these people. They wanted me to sponsor an academic Bible club on campus. I thought they were nuts. I would close the door to my classroom whenever they showed up and talked to me during my prep period. But they trained me to think from a worldview perspective. I was a believer, but I was schizophrenic. You know, I loved Jesus with my heart, but my mind was trained to think from a secular perspective. And so that's what brought me to Colorado. I ended up resigning my position as a teacher and coming to Colorado to work for the Caleb Campaign. I did that for 14 years. And during that time, we increased our family from one son to two sons. And eventually we adopted our daughter. So we have three kids. And then 26 years ago, three other guys and I started Worldview Academy. And that has been the history. Worldview Academy is a Christian leadership training program for students 13 to 18, basically. And we do that during summer season, camps around the country at colleges. It's an academic program. They're in class about 29 hours out of the week, actually. It's pretty intense. We train them in worldviews, evangelism, and apologetics, and servant leadership skills. But the distinction that we have, I think, is a practical application. We actually take students out on Wednesday afternoons on a college campus, downtown area, and have them share their faith. Many of these students have never been out in that kind of setting before doing that. And so it kind of rocks their world. They come back and they're jazzed. That 45 minutes on Wednesday afternoon transforms camp. from Sunday through Wednesday, they're getting a lot of truth. And you can kind of see it. They kind of get puffed up. I'm pretty smart for being a Christian. And then they hit the campus and they talk to another college student. I talk to a prof and they realize their Sunday school answers don't suffice. And they come back and they go, I need this. And that's when grace kicks in. So it's truth and grace, truth and grace.
Well, a lot has changed in 25 years. I know the gospel has not changed at all, but how has and this is even just a stupid question. I don't even know why, but I'm going to ask you it anyway. How's the world maybe changed how they respond to the Christian worldview? Because it used to seem like people were kind of okay with it. You know, they kind of even benefit from it. And even in the hippie movement, it was kind of like, dude, you're a Christian. Cool. You know, and now it's changed.
It's interesting that you say that, because I just read an article. I forget who did this, but the author said that up until about 2009, Christianity was considered to be a positive influence in the culture. Now, this was by non-Christians. Okay. And then from 2009 to 2014, Christianity became neutral. You know, that's your truth, or that's true for you, but it's not true for me. But since 2014, Christianity is now considered to be a negative. Mm. Christians are not considered to be just wrong. Christians are considered to be evil.
Wow.
And that is a dramatic shift in the culture within Christendom. Now, I'm dealing with students who, this is not a come get your unsaved friends saved camp.
Right.
There are camps for that. Okay. This is a leadership camp. So when students show up, I mean, that does happen. Students show up thinking they own their faith and they're there on their mom and dad's coattails.
Right.
You know, but by the end of camp, they've made it their own. But we're dealing with those who are wanting to be leaders in Christianity, in their faith, in whatever field they enter. And I've seen a shift in the past several years there. There's, I think, four things, maybe moral bankruptcy. We have spent and we're spending our children's legacy. You know, mm-hmm. we are not reinvested into the moral bank for our children, our future generations.
That's a dad issue.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It's very much a dad issue. And that leads to confusion. For example, a few years ago, I had a conversation with a small group at lunch. These were girls, maybe 13 to 14 years old, all homeschooled. And one of them said, what do you think about Caitlyn Jenner? And I said, you mean Bruce? And she said, well, she wants to be called Caitlyn. I said, well, Abraham Lincoln asked a group of people, if you call a sheep's tail a leg, how many legs does a sheep have? And I said, the answer is four. I don't care what you call the tail. I said, check his DNA. And she said, well, he claims to be a Christian. And I said, well, he may very well have trusted Christ. But the question is he living consistently with a biblical worldview? Now, if I have to have that kind of conversation with a homeschool girl at our camp, then right. What is the general Christian community like? Mm. You see my point?
Yeah.
And then that leads that the confusion is based on biblical illiteracy. And I'm seeing more and more of that. I can't tell you how many times I stand up before a group and reference a scripture passage, and I've watched them go to the table of contents to find that particular book. Mm-hmm. That should not happen. I mean, that happened to me when I was young, okay? But I was an idiot, okay? and it should not happen in our setting, at our camps, is what I'm saying.
Right.
And then finally, I think that leads to a lack of concern for liberty. And that is most concerning to me. Biblical illiteracy leads to a lack of concern for liberty for all.
Well, you know, and really, maybe that's kind of a lead in to why I had you on the show. And man, I'm already seeing it. We may have to do this again. We'll let you sleep a little bit longer. But when we spoke in Palmer, Alaska, we were kind of coming out of, I thought, of the COVID thing. I can only call it that. I just can't say any other descriptive words that the media would use. It just riles me. Right. But we were in the midst of it, or maybe kind of coming out. You know, we could fly. They had to wear a mask. And I just remember, and I wish I could remember the exact quote. And because I can't, I tried to convey it to you earlier, and you couldn't remember either.
I wish I could remember.
So all the listeners are going to have to kind of pretend like this is really a brilliant thing. But I remember you saying something like someone, you were having a conversation because our tables, our spaces were side by side or close to. And I heard you having this conversation with a lady or a guy, and it was about the mask mandate. And you said something that I just thought was really brilliant. And the way you said it was kind of like, this is not it, but, you know, I don't believe in masks. And then you went on to describe, you know, it doesn't put them in a bad position, doesn't put you in a bad position. It's just like you're stating something and you got your point across and maybe you caused them to think, but it didn't sound like you were a kook, you know, like, you know, where they start talking about, well, you know, you start breathing your own air and, you know, the next thing you know is you start sprouting another limb and I'm not going to, you know, and it sounds.
Or a kidney stone.
Or a kidney stone. And that's what I asked Scott. It's like, this could be long haul. But here's the thing. I am perplexed. And so I'm really having you on the show just for me, because I just, you know, I feel like the world is attacking all the things that I have taken for granted. You know, things that like just going to a grocery store or, you know, Walmart or Kohl's sends a thing. And instead of, you know, fall weather and they're showing this husband and wife and two little kids, now they're showing a husband with two little kids. And it just drives me crazy, you know, because, you know, the minority is so less than 5% identify as homosexual, you know, right. And yet it just feels like it's inundating. And I just thought. And so I've told my kids, I've written letters to Disney. I've written letters to chairman of the boards. And I don't want to sound like a kook. I want to be salt and light. And my kids will say, Dad, it doesn't even matter. Why are you doing it? They're not going to read it. And I'm like, I feel like I got to say something. You know? And so I just want to maybe ask you, how can we be salt and light, you know, without sounding like nuts, you know?
And the answer to that is we can't.
Okay.
Because once again, I go back to that study that article that now Christianity is being viewed as evil. And so what that has a chilling effect upon us as Christians standing in the public square and speaking. First of all, we haven't done a very good job of doing that over the years. As a result of that, we're reaping the whirlwind, okay, in our culture. Yeah. And as you said, it's not the majority, it's 5% or less that have been recruited into this lifestyle that now drive the narrative. And so I sense, Todd, that you're a racist.
Yeah, I'm feeling more and more like it.
you're a bigot, you're a homophobe, you're a misogynist. Now, how do we respond when somebody charges us with that?
Because they say if you disagree, you're a hater.
Yes, we have lost the art of argument, of discussion in our culture. And by argument, I don't mean yelling. I mean debating issues. And so when people always resort to the ad hominem. And when they do, a friend of mine taught me how to respond to that. And so Todd, call me a racist.
Okay, you're a racist.
I don't believe you.
Now, I think that's what you used with the mask thing.
Thanks. Yeah, because I remembered it as you were talking about it. That's the thing. It's I don't believe you. Now, it's not I don't believe that. It's I don't believe you. Typically, when somebody charges us with being racist or homophobic, we try to defend ourselves by, oh, no, I have friends who are.
Right.
Okay. And we've lost because we're playing by their rules. What you're doing is you're reaching over, grabbing the rug and pulling it from underneath their feet by saying, I don't believe you. And, you know, climate change is a scientific fact. I don't believe you. Are you calling me a liar? No, you may prove to be accurate. I just don't believe you. Now, what does that do? It forces that person to have to present evidence and defend the statement. That puts them on the defensive. And then you can have a if they want to continue, then you can have a discussion. They can present their side. But usually it's just an attempt to silence Christians. And we need to stand in the public square and proclaim truth and grace boldly and not cower in a corner. The other side has changed the language so effectively that we can't respond. For example, cancel culture. Why do they use that word? What did it replace? It replaced censorship. The left hates the word censorship, but they want to do it. So they can't use that word. They can't say, we're going to censor you. We're going to cancel you. I believe, and Christians believe, in equality. But that's not the word that's used. It's equity. That's not the same thing. Equity is the butcher at the market putting his thumb on the scale when he weighs out your portion of the meat, right?
Right.
And that's not equality. I believe in justice for all. I believe in liberty for all. And so we need to stand and proclaim more loudly and more clearly those first principles, those biblical principles of truth and justice and liberty under law.
And really, I sometimes struggled with that because, you know, I felt like people would say, oh, you just want it to be good for you. And I'm like, no, that's not true. You know, maybe selfishly, I want it to be good for my children and my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren and their children, but it also extends to others. So it is not a selfish liberty that says, I deserve these things. You know, I deserve to, but it really is for others.
That's license if it's just selfish.
Right, right, right.
I want to do what I want to do, regardless of its effect on others or regardless of what the law says. Mm-hmm. And so we as Christians need to be more concerted in our effort to get out of the pew and to go out and address these issues. When I say moral bankruptcy, we're not addressing the issues in the church that are affecting our children and the culture. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know, it's just the idea is, well, we need to preach the gospel. I just need to tell people about Jesus. Well, that you're falling prey to the sacred secular dichotomy. And that is, there are certain things that we do during the week that are sacred, are spiritual. We read our Bible, we go to church, we sing songs. And then there's things that we do that are you know, just secular things, like we watch sports or we read a book or we go for a walk. No. Romans 12 says, I urge you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your reasonable, another translation says, your spiritual service of worship. What's worship for the Christian? It's everything we do, right, from changing a baby's dirty diaper, okay, to being president of a company. It is everything we do, even Scott passing a kidney stone. I mean, everything the Christian does is worship because we do it to the glory of God. And right. We have fallen prey to this sacred secular dichotomy. We have retreated from the culture. We have cowed. And whenever we do then go and insert ourselves, like writing a letter, then we're accused of being nuts. And so here's again, how that applies when somebody says, oh, you're just one of those Christian nuts. I don't believe you. And then they have to prove their position. Now, I'm not going to argue with somebody based on their definitions. Whoever sets the definitions wins the debate.
Well, tell me how to write a letter, because, you know, like I sent you a little billboard, a picture of a billboard.
Yeah, really. I never could see that.
Oh, well, let me just tell you. And
yeah,
so
describe it for me.
So I was talking to a guy. He was interviewing me actually for his little Christian radio there in Peoria, Illinois. And he said, oh, I drive by this billboard every day. And he described it. And I said, hey, would you send me a picture of that? And so the next time he went by, he sent me a picture. And it's by Brave Law Center. It says, be brave, get brave. And it's got a picture of the lawyer, you know, and I don't even know why they ever include their pictures, because they always look like, what, I want to do business with you, you know, but it's got his picture. And then in big, bold letters, it says, are you unhappy? Question mark. And then it says, life is short, dot, 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 get a divorce. You know, getbravelaw.com. And so I told the guys on my email list, I said, hey, this makes me mad. And I said, I'm not telling you to write him, but hey, he left his website and contact information right there.
Right.
How would you begin to write that? Because I know, because some dads will, they write back to me and they say, hey, Todd, I did it. This is what I sent them. And, you know, it's a quotation out of scripture. It goes to the biblical mandate right away. And I feel like, and I might be wrong, and maybe that's what we, like you said, maybe that's what we are, but they go, oh yeah, you're one of those.
Right.
How would you approach it, maybe?
Well, if I were writing a letter to him, I would approach it with the basic building blocks of any culture or family. And children need a mom and a dad that is sound science, you know, it's just wisdom, okay? And, you know, you appear to be encouraging the dissolution of the family rather than encouraging an attempt to reconcile. There are instances where there is no other alternative. We live in a fallen world. Let's just be honest about that. Mm-hmm. And so his service is necessary, but he is pandering to the lowest level. I would encourage him to raise the bar and to possibly add to his company, his law firm, a Christian counselor that might intervene prior to his need to be brought into the scene. Mm-hmm. Now, you're right. You know, most of that's going to be dismissed by him. Okay. And it may be an exercise in futility. But however you do it, do something. Mm-hmm. I was walking downtown Denver years ago, down in 16th Street Mall, which was a big pedestrian area. And there was a street preacher, had the soapbox, you know, standing on the box, big black attack Bible. He was preaching hellfire and brimstone. And as I walked by, I kind of winced. I thought, ooh, you know, mm-hmm. It wasn't that he was preaching anything unbiblical, but I winced. And God at that moment went, slapped me right across the face and said, Bill, that may not be what I've called you to, but I may have called him to that. And it's a reminder that this guy who was preaching in the streets was not preaching anything heretical. It was sound theology, but it wasn't my sphere of influence. It wasn't what I was called to. So I'm not going to fault somebody who writes a letter that is scathing, okay? Mm. It may be what God called him to do, and it may be what triggers a change in that attorney's worldview. He may have to be inundated. You know, statistics show us that those who trust Christ have to hear the gospel at least a dozen times, right? You know, I need to hear the gospel daily, basically. And so I guess my point is, don't be shamed into not doing something because you're afraid you're going to appear to be that guy, right?
Right, right.
Write the letter, put it aside for 3 days, then reread it and rewrite it. Mm-hmm. Give it to your best friend and say, read this and tell me what you think. Give it to your pastor. I encourage students all the time. I have students come to me at camp all the time, say, I have a relative, you know, grandfather, I have an uncle who's not a Christian or is involved in the homosexual lifestyle or doing this or that. How can I reach out to him? And the answer is the hardest people you have to talk to are those who are closest to you, because they know what buttons to push, right? And they know how to get around you. And so I always encourage them to sit down and write a letter and say, I've never told you about the most important thing in my life and how it affects my relationship with you. And again, write it, set it aside, reread it, rewrite it. Give it to your mom or dad, I tell them. Give it to your pastor. and then send it. Mm. And that what that's doing is you're reaching out, and it's in their ballpark at that point. So if you want to quote scripture with the guy, if God calls you to stand and preach hellfire and brimstone, do it. Mm. Don't be cowed into sitting on the sidelines.
Because even in that big corporate culture, I was talking to a guy who was part of that, and he said, "Oh, we take the letters really seriously. You know, we read them all. You know, because they're not about doing things moral. They just want a bigger audience. You know." And I think again,
it's the story of the unrighteous judge. Hmm. And the woman knocking on the unrighteous judge door.
That's exactly true.
Yeah. He didn't change his view because it was the right thing to do. He changed it because of the pressure. I have a friend who years and years ago was on a Delta airline flight. And there were movies, and one was fairly offensive. And so he took time to write to the CEO of Delta explaining why he thought this was inappropriate. And he got a personal letter back from the CEO. And at that point, they pulled those offensive movies. You don't see that now because, you know, that's, again, they give the public what they want. And because we have pulled back from being salt and light, then nature abhors a vacuum. So does anything in society. If we don't fill that vacuum with truth and grace, the other side's going to do it. And they do it very cleverly, and they do it well.
And they have won. I mean, even as you talked about, you know, just the change, all those changes were really in the last 10 or 15 years. And the changes in 5 years is just mind-blowing. It's just mind-blowing.
It's an
avalanche. And again, just that that small vocal minority has won.
And Christians have never been in the majority. Mm. We've always been in the minority. And that's that's, for example, why the First Amendment was written, to protect speech and dissent. Mm. And Christians, it was written for Christians because Christians are always speaking in dissent against the culture. We're always calling the culture back to righteousness, and the culture doesn't want to hear it. They want to shut us up. I think another thing that we as dads especially need to instill in our families is the understanding of jurisdiction. Who has the right to speak law where? And so there's the family, there's the church, the state, and I would add, besides the individual, the employee-employee relationship. And if we were able to understand those are the pegs on which we can hang issues. I was reminded of this while you were trying to remind me of what I said in Alaska, and it was surrounding the issue of mask mandates. And the question is, who has jurisdiction to speak those mandates? Those are unlegislated edicts. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not the way we do law here. Okay. For example, you can't come into my house and put your stuff in my fridge. It's my house. I have jurisdiction in my house. I have the right, for example, to discipline my children. Now, could I take and eat my little girl, Ruby Nell? Boil and eat her? No, who would step in? Well, my wife would have stepped in, and then the state would have stepped in, okay? My jurisdiction's limited. Now, can the state tell me to pay my taxes? Yes. Can the state come in and say, we don't like the color of ribbons you're putting in little Ruby Nell's hair. We're going to remove her from your household. No, because the state has limited jurisdiction. And then there is the church. Can the church come to me and say, Bill, we find that you're in gross immorality and we are going to kick you out of the church? Yeah, Matthew 18, 1 Corinthians 5. Can the church come to me and say, Bill, we're in a building program and we're going to take your entire paycheck this week? No, because the church has limited jurisdiction. And then there is the employer-employee relationship. Can my boss come to me and say, Bill, the toilets are dirty, go clean them? Yeah. Can he come to me and say, Bill, we're out of change, I want you to go down to the bank and rob it? Well, he can say it, I don't have to do it, because he has limited authority. We have different jurisdictions, and we have blurred the line on that to the point where we can't talk about issues and where they fall under which jurisdiction. The only person who has all authority is Jesus Christ, but he has given jurisdictions for our good and our benefit, for order. And for example, why are there curfew laws? Well, it's not because I can't be out all night. I can certainly be out all night. In fact, I could give my 15-year-old, when he was 15, permission to be out all night. Okay. Why do we have curfew laws? Well, it is to protect those because nothing good happens after midnight. Every parent says that, right? And it's true, but why do we have curfew laws? I can give my children permission to be out all night. It's because parents, the fathers, were not exercising their jurisdiction. And some children were running amok. And so what happens is another jurisdiction will step in. And the state stepped in and said, parents are not exercising their jurisdiction. We have to. Now, what the state takes, it doesn't give back easily. Mm-hmm. And so the state has become Pac-Man. It's just gobbling up because we don't understand jurisdiction. We don't teach jurisdiction in our churches. And as a result, we can't sort the issues that are coming at us in a tidal wave. You know, the governor says we have to wear masks. Well, that's not legislative. I don't believe you. Show me the law. Okay. I don't believe you. Now, notice I said, I don't believe you. Not I don't believe that. I don't believe you. It makes it very, very personal. And you have to have a conversation or they walk away. So this issue of jurisdiction is troubling me a great deal. Not only do we have, you know, moral bankruptcy, not only do we have confusion, not only do we have biblical illiteracy, not only do we have a lack of concern for liberty, I think it rests on the part of it is that we don't understand jurisdiction. Mm. Who has the right to speak law where? Mm. And that's something that if we as families began to instill, then our children and future generations would be able to step back and say, oh, this person does not have the authority to tell me that I can't speak here. We have a situation in, we also do a bridge year program for students who are just out of high school who want to get grounded in their faith before they hit college and their career path. It's Worldview Bridge Year, and it's held in Canyon City, Colorado. And part of the program, we take our students out and have them engage high school students in conversation at a city park, which is right across the street from the high school. And the school has an open school policy. So during lunch, students flow out of the high school, walk two blocks down to the fast food restaurants, and then some of them hang out in the park. Well, there's also the drug dealers who hang out in the park. And every time we've been there, there's been a police presence, but you can't catch drug dealers in action, right? And so here's what the city and the school have done to try to alleviate that problem. It's a problem. Drug dealing's a problem. They have reached an intergovernmental agency agreement to turn over the park to the school 5 days a week, 9 months out of the year from dawn to dusk, so that they don't have to catch a drug dealer. They can just say, you're not a student. You can't be here. We're going to cite you for trespassing. Now, it seems reasonable, does it not? It seems, well, we don't want drugs dealing in the park. It doesn't solve the problem. It just moves the problem a half block down the alley, out of the sight of the principal. He doesn't have to look out his office window and see it going on. In fact, I had a conversation with him. I said, you're trying to solve a spiritual problem with a legal solution. We're out here trying to solve a spiritual problem with a spiritual solution. We're proclaiming gospel. His response was, well, that's just your opinion. Now, why do I bring that up? Because what that has done is it's effectively made our students, made me, trespassers in the park when we engage high school students in conversation about the gospel. Now, that is an issue of jurisdiction. That policy needs to go away. because I believe in liberty for all, not liberty for some. If we don't have liberty for all, we have liberty for none. And we need to be proclaiming truth and grace. We don't want to suppress bad ideas. I'm on a search and destroy mission. I want to destroy bad ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's 2 Corinthians 10:5. We are destroying speculations, arguments raised up against the knowledge of God. We're not suppressing ideas. We want to destroy ideas, not people, ideas.
Mm.
Bad ideas kill people.
Well, Bill, we are out of time, and we're going to have to do this again because, you know.
I don't believe you.
And I'm going to use that. He finally came through at the end and remembered what was so brilliant about him. But, you know, again, thanks for challenging us to be salt and light because, you know, the promise is that we are not salty, you know, we're thrown out and we're good for nothing.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I've been teaching this to students and now I've had to put it into practice. I have actually filed and declared that I am a candidate for the Colorado House of Representatives.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So, but you didn't just say it right here. So we're not like this is not where you announced it.
You're among the first. Yes.
All right. Yeah. Well, Bill, if they want to be part of that, if they want to, because I know there are listeners who are in Colorado, how would they get a hold of you or how might they learn more about Worldview Academy?
Worldview Academy, they can go to worldview.org. If they want to contact me, it's just bjack@worldview.org. And if they are interested in helping with my campaign or finding out what I stand for, it's just billjack4coloradohouse.com.
That's exciting. That's exciting. Well, we'll be praying for that. And I'll keep an eye on how that goes. And tell you what, if you get me some mail-in ballots, I'll pass them around here in Indiana.
Great. Well, I am from Illinois, you know, in Chicago, the philosophy is vote early and vote often.
That's right. Even if you're dead, if you're dead. Well, thanks for joining us, Bill, and we'll have you back again and have a great day.
Thank you.
Well, Scott, I hope you were encouraged. I was encouraged by Bill. You know, I've kind of sat on the sidelines and heard his passion for lots of years, and I know this is what he cares about. And, you know, I think it's pretty cool that even though I'm not going to do it, you know, that he's running for an office. I was in a men's gathering, and we should have talked about that over in Illinois, and I'll make it available next year. Southern Illinois, there were about 400 or 500 guys, father-son thing, but there were several guys. Chris Miller, who's a state representative down there, he kind of ran the whole thing, has run the whole thing for 26 years, but there were several people. His wife, Mary Miller, is a U.S. representative, and just they talked about being salt and light, and really for us dads to be that, yeah, it's a big deal. Well, Scott, we're going to have to talk more about your kidney stone. So I don't know when we're going to do that, but and you have other things to talk about. So, and I've got other things to talk about. So, Dad, have a great week. You know, if you got some fall things to do to button up that house because it's going to be cold out there, do so and do it with your kids and do it with your family and be salt and light and do it because you to dad.
And that's our show for this week, Dad. Thanks for joining us for the Family Man Show with Todd Wilson. If you have a question for the show, email Todd at familyman@familymanweb.com. If you have a question for me, you can reach me at Scott@unsocializedmedia.com. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week.